The following is an at-will presentation.
Homosexual. Gay. Mask. Femme. Leather. Bear. Twink. Daddy. Top. Bottom. Lube. Anal sex. Wait. You're gonna put what where? Rainbows and closets and nightclubs and sin. A beautiful fucking sin. Gay is nothing if it isn't a win. Gay isn't one color, it's every color. Gay is art. Gay is historically a term that means happy. Gay is creative. Gay is a human right. Gay is an animal instinct. Gay is truth. Gay is family. Gay is normal. Gay is love. And anyone who thinks otherwise can go fuck themselves. Okay, now that we got that out of the way, let's move on, shall we? So sometimes I date boys. Not because I'm gay, necessarily, but because I'm confident. Because I'm self-aware. On some sick, narcissistic shit, I like the idea of kissing someone that looks like me. Man equals primal. Two men together equals more primal. I like more. I remember the first time I figured out that gay was a thing. I was 8 years old and in my mom's candy apple red GMC Jimmy. I'll never forget looking up at my mom and saying something along the lines of, "Mom, why would two boys ever be in love? They can't have babies." In my very early sexual understanding, of course, the only reason you have sex is to have a baby. Duh. My mom's reaction was not a pleasant one. She went off on how disgusting being gay was and how even the thought of two men holding hands was downright revolting. Come to think of it, that's probably why she bought me my first Playboy. Don't worry, Queens. Mom's come around. Over the years, I dated plenty of girls, but always in the back of my mind was a curiosity of which I was never ashamed, but indeed cautious. It was only a matter of time. Plus, it was against the rules. I like against the rules. The exchange of power between two men in love is incomparable to that of its heterosexual counterpart. It's animalistic. When sex is not a means to procreate, it's high voltage friction. It's next level survival. It's living. Not better, not worse, just different. I like different. And we can share clothes. I remember thinking to myself there was no way I was going to go through life not knowing what gay felt like. This isn't an experiment. This is pure, unconditional proof of living my undeniable truth. Now I know. And now I'm talking about it. My name is Nico Tortorella. I'm attracted to people who are unapologetically themselves. I'm in love with love. Everybody's talking about gender and sexuality these days. This show is a chance for me to broaden the conversation. So each episode, I'm going to talk to someone I love or have yet to love about how our gender identity, sexuality, and relationships shape us, define us, and make us original, beautiful fucking creatures of love. Welcome to the Love Bomb. This is a conversation with a man I love named Kyle.
Who is Kyle Krieger?
Just a boy sitting in front of a boy.
How do you identify, by the way?
I define myself as a homosexual.
Cisgender gay man.
Yes.
Well, just let's start from the beginning. I mean, what do you do?
I am a hairstylist, and I am a brother, and I am a son, and I live in New York City, and I just recently moved here from Los Angeles, and I also make YouTube videos on the weekly. And I take photos.
So where would he?
Not really. I don't really have as many subscribers as you would call someone who is a celeb. How do you say it?
So where would he?
Yeah, exactly.
But you are, though. I mean, people know who you are. You get stopped everywhere we've gone in the past. Somebody stops you and says something to you.
It's very nice when they do that. Yesterday at the salon,
yeah.
I had a girl come in and she sat in the foyer of the salon and waited for me to be done. And then when I had a break in my schedule, she wanted to come over and talk. And I was like, I'm at work right now. Like I have, you know, clients back to back. Like I don't, she was like, I just came from Germany and I just want to tell you like that I love you and that you're great and that your sister's great. And it was very sweet.
Uh-huh.
And then the other day, these two girls from Saudi Arabia came in. And they came up from behind me while I was giving a blow dry and, like, hugged me from behind. I was like, well, I haven't been hugged from behind by a girl, but they're so cute. Yeah, they're very nice. To have people come up to you on the street is very heartwarming. It's cool. It feels good.
I feel like sometimes when people say they follow you on Instagram or they watch your YouTube videos, sometimes you say why. Like, ugh, why?
I don't say, like, ugh, why. I just say...
an immediate reaction.
If someone says that they follow me on Instagram, I usually say, I'm sorry.
Why, though?
because I just think it's so funny that they... I don't know, because the stuff that I put on the... I guess I don't think that 500,000 people are seeing everything.
It's more than 500,000 at this point, right?
Well...
oh, it's like 480.
In everything, yes. But, like, I just don't think about... And then I look through my feed and I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I posted that to 500,000 people. And now they all see my bum.
I mean, because you are naked all the time on social media.
I mean,
there's no like full wiener shots, but you're like a very hyper sexualized human being on the social medias.
Yeah, but in real life, it's like.
It's not necessarily the case. What's that about?
I don't know. I find that. What is it about? I think that it's very, I think aesthetically, the nudity looks beautiful on film, on camera, and on digitally. I love that, for my aesthetic, I like that I don't have to worry about clothes, like, messing up the shot. Like, I like it to look just very natural and very one subject, and it can have a certain mood if there's nudity, and it doesn't necessarily have to make it feel sexy, although... if you are a certain body type, I feel like that is socially accepted as, you know, like good looking or whatever.
Yeah.
Then maybe it can be sexy, but I don't necessarily intend for them to be sexy. I just am without clothing on. So,
but I think that you don't intend for them to be sexy because you're not necessarily a hypersexual person. But somebody that is and sees that automatically is like, wow, sex on a stick.
Yeah, I mean. I get that, you know, and sometimes I play to my strengths, right. You know, like I get that in the beginning, when I didn't have that much of a following, I realized that being naked would get me more attention.
Yeah.
And it's the type of attention that feels empty, though, right? It's the type of attention that, you know, being validated for your outside is inauthentic and doesn't really fill you up as much or at all in comparison to someone saying to me, like, I love the way that this shot is composed and I love the colors that you chose. And, like, you know, if someone is right. validating the actual photo, it feels much more authentic than what if I'm naked and they just are sexualizing the subject.
That makes sense. I mean, a lot of ways you kind of started that guy on Instagram, right?
I don't know.
I mean,
you were
one of the first people to actually be doing it, to be taking your clothes off on Instagram in a very beautiful way, not in this like, hey, look, I'm a porn star type of way.
Oh, well, thanks. Yeah, no, I mean, there was a group of, I mean, I don't necessarily know, but I was definitely inspired by other people who were doing it around the time that I was doing it. And I just think there was like a switch. I don't know when the switch was, but I think that people, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, people were caring about what they were posting, but not like they're caring now. Like, people are just paying more attention to the art of what they put online, and I think that is really cool, and it's created a really beautiful place for people to post, you know, how they see the world and how they see themselves, and it's nice. So, I like it a lot.
I mean, I also think 5 years ago, people weren't necessarily making money on Instagram.
Mm-mm.
And now, it's one of the fastest growing industries in the world. And the ability to connect with other people and, like, get jobs done.
Yeah, social media is not going anywhere. And it is, I have a love-hate relationship with it, right? So I realize that it's part of my income, and that's really nice. Sometimes that feels daunting and, like, annoying. But it's also something I really love because it feels really good to share with people how you see yourself, how you see the world. Like, how, you know, like, I take a lot of my portraits, and I have this desire to want to share it because it's sort of like your art, right? Even if it's on, like, a medium such as social media or the internet. It still feels good to share your art with the world, and it's nice. I feel very grateful and lucky that I get to do it with a lot of people looking, you know?
What's the hate side of it? That was all love.
the part that I don't like is when I feel uninspired, I feel this sense of like, oh, I'm going to be forgotten if I don't post anything or something. Like this like feeling that is like not true, mm-hmm. right? So like it's not true, but it just feels like a sense of anxiety that I pressure myself to post and to stay up on and what I'm putting out there. And I also pressure myself to make it better than the last post. And sometimes if you have this idea of perfection in your head, that it can paralyze you from posting anything. And I also, if I get too in my head about what people like, are they going to like this? Are they going to like me? Are they going to think that I'm like, like, I don't know, if I start getting in people's heads of what they're going to think, it can also paralyze me from what I want to post. And that's crippling to someone who's an artist, you know.
Right.
Not that I'm an artist, but, you know.
You are an artist.
Just someone that's, you know, it can be crippling, and I don't like that part of it. So it's getting over your own fear.
Do you think that you do it more for you or more for your fans?
I don't know. I want to believe that I do it for me and that I'm grateful that people still look and engage with me.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, it is very healing for me to, as an addict, I feel very ritualistic about things. And even in my sobriety, I feel ritualistic about stuff. And so taking photos is one of them, right? Like, I love to do it alone. And the reason why is most of my like photos are self-portraits of me alone is because it's very healing to set up my camera, think of a position, think of the composition, think about where I'm going to be, think of the coloring, how I'm going to edit, and then like get into position with my remote. And like, it's just very like a very healing process that I really like a lot. And so a lot of the work is for me, and then the posting, I guess, is for other people, but it also feels very freeing to show people, be like, look, this is what I created, you know, mm-hmm. and I'm going to still create, and I want to inspire other people to create, and they do. And it's so nice when people will like send me like pictures and tag me and stuff, be like, you inspired me to take this. And it's just very nice that it can be a back and forth and mm-hmm. engage with people that you don't even know all around the world.
You throw around the word narcissism a lot.
I throw around narcissism a lot to take the wind out of everyone else's sails.
Right.
So, like, if I, you know, like, I feel like if I tell people that I know that it's, that, you know, some of it is narcissism, then, and then they can't make fun of me, but.
You beat them to the punch.
Yeah, but I think it's true, though. I think a lot of it can be narcissism. I notice that when I'm, you know, editing in post and I'm, like, drawing on abs because I, you know, want to, like, feed into the social accepted body type, I'm like, wow, this is, like, not the right way to go about this.
But. Ladies and gentlemen, he doesn't have to draw on abs. he just accentuates what he already has.
Yeah, it's a lot of smoke and mirrors. I mean, I just moved from LA. They taught me a lot. But
I mean, like, to be narcissistic, right, there has to be this level of self-love, right? Do you love yourself?
Yes. No. Yes and no. I think that I battle with that a lot. I feel like there are times when I feel like an authentic sense of self-worth and self-love, and then other times I feel that I'm upset with myself and that I love myself less on certain days. But overall, I feel a genuine sense of love, and I feel like that only has happened in the past 9 years that I've been sober, and I like to say that my self-esteem has grown, but when I was using drugs and alcohol, that I had no self-esteem. Mm. And now that I have been sober 9 years, I have low self-esteem, right? It's like a slow process to build. But narcissism does play a role in that, and I feel like it is a very detrimental quality to self-actualization, and I feel like it can really hold people back. And I have to check mine all the time, and I have to say, like, look, is this really self-serving? You know, like, am I acting out from myself right now, or am I looking to seek to, you know, understand someone else rather than seek to be understood, you know, about where I'm coming from?
Yeah.
What about you?
What about me?
What do you feel about narcissism?
I think it's a word that people throw around a lot, and I think that, you know, it has a negative connotation to the public, but I don't necessarily see it as negative. If I just wrap it around the ability to love yourself unconditionally, if that's what narcissism is, then, like, yeah, I'm narcissistic.
Hmm. I think the exact definition of narcissism is excessive or erotic interest in oneself or one's physical appearance.
Erratic or erotic?
Erotic. So excessive or erotic.
Yeah, we're both narcissists. I mean...
So, yeah, in other words, that are synonyms of it would be, like, vanity, self-love, self-admiration, self-absorption. And I realize, yeah, like, those, the psychology behind it would be something like extreme selfishness, grandiose view of one's own talents and craving admiration, and characterizing a personal type. And, like, so...
Would you say I'm more of a narcissist than you?
No, I don't think there's... I don't think it's, like, comparative. But, like, you're right, those words that we just said, like, have a negative connotation, and I think that there are times when I can lean towards that, and then there's times where it can be a more authentic self-love, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, usually when I'm acting out online, it is more, I don't know, it just depends. And I don't know, I feel like when I'm actually taking portraits of other people, it feels really authentic, and at sometimes when I'm taking self-portraits, it feels authentic, too.
I think... online, you seem more narcissistic than you actually are in person. And I think...
Yeah.
Because I don't think you necessarily are in person. I think there's, like, this humbling quality of you that is one of my favorite things about you. That when people meet you in person from knowing you online, I think that's one of the first things that people usually say, right? It's like, you're not exactly how they thought you would be. Right?
Yeah, like it's very nice to hear that people will be surprised. Like, and people also say if they come in for a haircut or something, they're like, you know, they're sometimes a little bit nervous and surprised, and they're like, it's really you, you know. Like just yesterday, this one guy was like, it's really you. I just am so excited that you're here. I just can't believe that it's you. And I was like, well, it's me. And he was just like, halfway through the haircut, I'm like working and like a little bit more quiet than I am on YouTube, and he was like, is everything okay? Like, is anything wrong? And I'm like, no, everything's fine. And he was like, you just seem really quiet. And I was like, well, in person, I'm just like...
You're a quiet person.
I'm just like not like I am online, you know? Like, mm-hmm. Online, I have to be a caricature of who I really am, because if I was an introvert online, no one would watch, you know? No one would want to, like... listen, you know, sit there and watch me be quiet, you know, so it's almost like I'm turned up online a little bit.
One of my favorite things you do online is you constantly tell your fans that you love them, like, all the time in your videos.
I do love them. They're the best. I get that without people watching and without people subscribing and without people following, that I would not be able to, I would be posting myself to nobody. Which would be, I guess, okay, but it's nice to be able to share it and engage with people who, you know, that I get a sense, like, people that have been following me for years, like, even though there might be, like, 500 comments in the thing and they think I don't see it, like, I see it. You know, I see everything.
Oh, yeah, I mean,
and
you, like, talk to everybody.
I try to as much as I can, because I want them to feel like they are a part, and we are a part of a connection, or we are a part of something, and we're not just on here, you know, to do nothing. Like, I think it's nice to be connected.
Do you think that you have been more able to engage with people in your real life since social media has given you the ability to engage with people online?
No, I still feel a little bit handicapped when it comes to connecting with people in real life. First of all, I disengage with people in real life a lot. Like, I feel very, when I, like, for example, I'm very, if there is a room and there's a corner with nobody and then there's a corner with lots of people, I go to the corner where there's nobody.
Me too.
Do you know? So, like, I am it's weird. There is a sense of safety about connecting to people online because there is a very, there is a huge lack of intimacy, right? There is no, like, I have this huge fear of intimacy that when I walk into a room, I immediately shut down. I, like, start sweating. I'm, like, nervous. What am I going to say? Who am I going to talk to? Is anyone there? Do they, like, know who I am? Are they going to hate me? Like, I, what have they heard about me? Like, I don't know. Do you know? So I just get very insecure and quiet when I walk into a room of people that I don't know. People that I do know, it just depends. Like, I you know, it's like some days, just like anybody, right? Some days I feel great, and some days I, you know, don't want to talk at all. And I, you know, it just depends. But it does feel safe to talk to people online more.
Which is a great segue to how we met.
Oh, yeah.
I first found out about you via Instagram. I mean, that was how I got eyes on you in the first place. You talk a lot about your sobriety, right?
Yeah.
And you are a very vocal person online. You are beautiful to look at. So I immediately was attracted to that, right? And then I dated one of your friends for a little bit.
Yes.
We met for the first time. And then a couple years later, we started talking on Instagram.
Yes.
Because we ran into each other in Palm Springs. You know, I found...
Oh, yeah. The first message?
Yeah, that first message yesterday. Look at this.
Oh, I know. I remember. I have it saved too.
I said, hey, you, question. My buddy wants to get a haircut in Palm Springs. Where should we go?
I know. And I was so excited that you texted me or that you sent me a message. I was like with my friend Anton. I was like, girl, he just sent me a message. I don't know what it means, though.
I remember running into you on the street in Palm Springs and I hugged you. Hello. We had met once. Really?
Yeah.
Maybe twice.
You were drunk.
I was drunk. Yeah, this is before I got sober. But I was sober in Palm Springs.
Yeah.
I had just gotten sober, or like 6 months sober.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew it was something that I wanted to talk to you about because I had looked up to you for so long about it.
Yeah.
So we started texting pretty quick from that. And I was dating somebody else at the time. But I remember... just in text message, it's interesting because I feel like we had that type of relationship that you're talking about, right? It wasn't intimate to begin with. It was on a phone for a long time, for like 6 months, really. We had a full-blown relationship on a phone until New Year's this past year.
Yeah.
And one of the first things that I said to you was just about how much I looked up to you and how much you've meant to me online and how much you've inspired me. And you said something along the lines of, you do the same thing for me. And sometimes when I'm going through day-to-day activities, I think to myself, what would Nico do?
Yeah. Because, you know, someone shared with me one time that one of our mutual friends was just like, yeah, when Nico like walks into a casting, he like doesn't even bring a headshot, and he's just like, he just has this attitude of like, if you want me, you'll know where to find me, like if you think that I'm good enough to do this. And I just don't really want to play by the rules. And I get that, because I mean, I don't know if that's true or not, but that's like what he told me. And not playing by the rules, I think, is inspiring at times. So I would, yeah, you'd just be like, sometimes I'd be like, well, I'm like, yeah, like I just, as a joke to myself when we were talking, I'd be like, just think about like what you would do. How would you approach this situation with a sense of self-confidence that I sometimes lacked, right? So it was just like, it just made me feel more inspired to take on something that maybe seemed like a very big uphill battle.
I love that.
Yeah, it was helpful.
I mean, we were straight up like pen pals. For 6 months, though, we really were. I mean, like, we would talk to each other pretty much all day.
Yeah, I think so.
Every day.
And photos.
And
you didn't have Snapchat, so I had to, like...
We never FaceTimed, though, ever.
We didn't?
No, not in the beginning.
Yeah. FaceTime is scary.
Yeah, yeah.
FaceTime is scary when you don't know... Like, the idea of having someone, like, a long-distance relationship with someone, like, online with some, you know, that you kind of know, but you don't know, because... I don't know. The camera just makes you feel so insecure. I feel like I don't like you have to. You're gonna hear my voice,
well, and you can see yourself in the camera too. So yeah,
and then you have to like look. I think there's really funny memes online about the first time you FaceTime with someone compared to like, you know, the 30th time, where you're just like the first time you are like set and lit and there's lights and like you have makeup, full face and everything, and then the 30th time you're like, you know, just like lame, just woke up in bed and looking like a mess. Yeah. You know, which is funny.
So we've shot a handful of YouTube videos together. I've been on your channel a few times. People have always speculated whether you and I were dating or whatever the fuck our situation was. We dated.
Yes.
For, what, 6 months?
Yes. A very nice 6 months.
A very wonderful 6 months. And so while we were pen pals, right,
Before we dated.
Before we dated, I was dating somebody else for a little bit. That ended. We started talking more heavily. I was like, hey, what are you doing for New Year's?
Yeah.
And you didn't really have any plans. I was like, why don't you come to New York? And we had, like, not really met each other, like, sober at this point.
Yeah.
And you booked a trip. And you just came. You weren't staying with me. You weren't supposed to be staying with me.
Where did I stay?
You were staying at Daniel's. But you stayed with me the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
And that first time that you came to my apartment, you were downstairs. I remember, like, I was so nervous because of how intimate our relationship was online, but I didn't know what it was going to be like in person. You want to talk about that?
No, meeting someone online for the first time in real life, I feel like I've had, like, very ups and downs, right? There are some times where, you know, that I would, for example, like, maybe 5 years ago, I used to have, like, apps that I would hook up with online, which I don't necessarily have them anymore, but when I was in my early 20s, I thought it was fun. And also when I was using, I would meet up with people that I would meet online, but I was high. So, like, I didn't really care about the intimacy of meeting someone for the first time. But when you're sober, it's, like, really scary because, you know, I'm just like, are we going to mesh well? Like, what's going to happen? Like, what about when we talk for the first time? Like, is he going to think that I look like my photos? Whatever. And it's exhausting and tiring and scary and anxiety provoking. And so, you know, there was really no difference with you. Because I also really, really, really liked you. So when you really are invested with someone in feeling for them and want it to work and you're, like, rooting for it rather than just, like, a hookup, right? Like, a hookup, like, whatever. If it's not, like, you know, if they don't look like their photos, you just leave and no big deal. But with you, I was so invested in wanting it to go further than just a hangout and just one weekend. That I was really scared and really nervous and, like, shaking and sweating and, like, you know, just very mindful about what I was wearing and what I was looking like and how my hair was and, like, you know, everything.
I mean, neither one of us could really form sentences. It was just, like, a lot of smiling and staring at each other.
It was really sweet.
It was super sweet.
Yeah, that feeling I will not forget for a long time. And just the idea of, like, hugging someone and be able to, like, feel their, like, heartbeat because they're so... because they're feeling the same thing you're feeling, and it was very nice, and it felt really good. So it was nice to have it reciprocated, right? Because if it was not reciprocated, then you're like, that's another big fear, right? Like, what if they don't like me as much as I like them? Like, then I'm, like, really screwed. So, that first day was great.
When had you felt that feeling before that?
I mean, it had been so long since I felt that feeling of just... So in the past few years, I was just worried that those feelings had disappeared from me, right? Like, I had just been worried that now that I had turned 30, that maybe I was less sensitive to those feelings and that I wouldn't necessarily, that I would never feel them again, you know? And just because if you go for so long without feeling that feeling, when you're so intoxicated by someone, that you're like, wow, did they just disappear, you know? So... the fact that those feelings stirred up inside me again when we started talking, I just felt so alive, right? Like, I was just so happy that it was possible again for me.
I mean, it was pretty much game on from the beginning, right? Yeah. There was no like, you know.
Yeah, it worked.
Slow burn. It just worked immediately.
Yeah.
And you were living in LA at the time. I was living here in New York. We made it work bi-coastal for a long time.
Yeah.
I was traveling there. You were traveling here.
We were traveling to other cities.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time in other cities.
That was cool.
And then you moved here.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of seemed like it all happened really fast, right? Not you moving here, but just like beginning, middle, end.
Yeah.
Looking back at it.
When we first started talking, one of the main reasons why I kept the idea of talking was because I was already putting in motion plans to come here, right? So because my sister lives on the East Coast and I feel very far from her, and because my business partner lives on the East Coast and we wanted to do more work together, and I was missing my family and stuff like that. I was just like, you know, I was planning on coming back here over here anyway. And then you happened to be here. And I was like, well, this just seems like it would work. So I might as well just keep talking to him. Rather than if you were lived here and I didn't plan on coming back, I would have been less inclined to tap into those feelings, you know?
My mom called it growing up a GUD, geographically undesirable, a GUD. I remember dating somebody and she was like, no, she's a GUD. I was like, what the fuck is a GUD?
Oh, yeah.
Geographically undesirable.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, you know, that is really frustrating. Dating someone long distance is so challenging.
But we did a really good job FaceTiming once we started dating.
Yeah.
I mean, that, like, honestly, I think if you are in a long distance relationship, that is the thing that, like, keeps it going.
Yeah, thank God for FaceTime.
And we spend hours on the phone with each other.
Yeah, it's nice. Without the sense of touch, it really feels like the person is right there.
Right.
You know, and it's really nice. And I feel like it's very easy to get by knowing that in 2 weeks you're going to see them with FaceTiming. But like when we would spend 4 weeks apart, that was like not, I was not into that. It was just like FaceTime like wasn't enough. Like it's good for a couple of weeks, but I want to be close to someone and I want to be intimate with them if I'm going to have those feelings for them. You know, right. It just seems so empty and like unfulfilling if they're so far away.
If you could go back to one time in our relationship as the best time, what would it be?
Oh man, there are so many great times. I thought Aspen was really fun.
That was right at the beginning. That was our first trip after.
Yeah, I mean,
you being here.
I honestly feel like the majority of the time I was very happy. So any of it was great. But there was something about that trip that felt very, just the way that I just loved the way that you did things. Like I just was so appreciative that the way that you traveled and the way that you stayed in the hotel and even little things that you like to go out to eat and you like walks and you like to do exciting stuff like, you know, spend the day snowboarding. And I like that you, the first thing in the morning you do is you order coffee to the room and the way that you have your coffee and the way that, like, I just loved all the details and I feel like I noticed them a lot more. And the way that you let me express myself artistically and the way that you want to be involved with that and that you help and that you let me take my time and you don't rush and you care and stuff like that. Like in the beginning, I just noticed that because it was all new to me because we had just met, that I was like, wow, like I haven't had someone let me be me for so long. So it just felt like I had a teammate, you know, like I had someone like a partner, like a teammate, like someone who was rooting for me and that it just was working, you know. So that felt great.
Yeah, it was a really good team. It still is a good team.
Yes.
My favorite time, I think, when I came to North Carolina to watch you do your TED Talk about,
oh my gosh,
getting sober.
That was great.
It was the first time I saw you cry.
Mm.
You're an emotional person, but you do a good job of like not letting people know that you're emotional.
Mm.
And you'd been planning this TED Talk for a long time. I heard it a couple times and you hadn't gotten emotional at all practicing it. And I remember sitting in the audience, I was sitting in the front row, and you got on stage and you just broke down. And I was like, I don't know. I knew I loved you at that point.
Well, thank you. I was not surprised that you came, because it is very much something you would do. I just couldn't believe that I was lucky enough to be with someone who would travel to come see that. Like, I mean, I've had people in the past that really were great people in relationships who did a lot for me. But it was kind of the turning point where I was like, oh, he's really in it. Right? Like, I almost didn't believe it until then. I was like, if he comes to this, he, like, really, really, really cares and loves me. And when you showed up, and I was just – and when you booked your ticket and you told me that you booked your ticket, I was just, like, blown away. I was just like, wow, this is so special. Like, I, you know, my mom and dad didn't even come, you know, and they're one state away on both ends because it was in North Carolina. And my sister came, who I knew would come, and then one of my best friends, Daniel, came, which was amazing. And I – just the fact that you were there and just to have you in my room, and then you helped me the night before and you calmed my nerves and you coached me like how to say it and when to do it and when to pause. And it just made it so much better. It made the speech better. It made better that you were there. The whole thing was there, and it made it great that you were in the front row and that you were rooting for me. And I just never had anybody root for me like that. I mean, I was dating.
It wasn't even a question. I knew I was going to be there. I knew how much it meant to you.
Yeah, it was nice. Yeah, thank you so much for that. I mean, it was great. It was great. I felt like I really had a great boyfriend at that time. I was like, this is like the real deal, you know?
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming to that.
Of course.
It was like one of my favorite times as well. That whole month was so stressful preparing, but it was...
I mean, you were a wreck.
Yeah, it was a wreck. I wanted to do a good job, you know?
You hadn't performed in front of other people before that, right?
Outside of support groups, I just never had spoken in front of that many people before, you know? But, it was, like, so nerve-wracking.
Let's switch gears for a second and talk about some of the past relationships that you've had.
Mm-hmm.
How many times do you think you've been in love?
Well, I was in love with alcohol and cocaine first.
Before anything.
No, I mean, yeah, I think for the first time, let's see, like the first time I was ever in love, oh man. I mean, I had a girlfriend in middle school who I thought that I loved.
In middle school?
Yeah. And I was like, she was so sweet, and she was also not sweet at times, but... I was so scared the first time that we had sexy time.
In middle school?
Oh, middle school? I don't know. Ninth grade.
Freshman.
So the first time we had sexy time, we had unprotected sex, which I do not recommend to anyone. But, and it was with a girl. So, like, back then my fear was getting someone, like, having a child. Where I don't have that fear anymore, which is so nice. But there's a whole new set of fears, right? With the sex that I engage with now, I take precaution now by either being on PrEP, which helps, or you know, or wearing condoms, or both. But back then, I was just so scared about, like, it almost kept me from. I was so scared of having a kid, I thought it would, like, ruin my high school life because I would have a different responsibility. So, but I was in love with her, and it was funny, and I was, that was the first time that I, like, that was the first time I had sex with someone. That was the first time that I, you know, thought I was going to be with someone for a long time, and...
And it was with a girl. I mean, you...
Yeah, I did not know, like, I knew that I had... When I was young, like, I knew that I would not mess around, but, like, kids on my soccer team, like, we would have sleepovers, and, like, we would sometimes sleep in the bed naked or in our underwear, and it wasn't sexual. It was just, like, I knew that it felt good. Like, I knew that I was like, wow, I like the way that this feels. And even though they're my friend, this is, like, stimulating to me. I also got the sense that there was a lot of pushback from that, from where I grew up, right? Like, it wasn't necessarily acceptable to, like, sleep with your friends who are boys in beds and stuff. And I knew that boys didn't hold hands, and I knew that boys didn't kiss, and I knew that that was, like, quote-unquote wrong, or viewed as wrong at that time.
Against the rules.
Yeah, so I, like, didn't engage in that behavior, really, in, you know, or I kept it a secret, right? And the first time that I hooked up with someone who was a boy, I was just so sick to my stomach. Like, there has been so much fed to me about how wrong that was. that I was so sick to my stomach that I threw up, that I just was, you know, and I had just, like, pretty much, I think I had just, like, kissed him or something, or maybe, like, he, like, maybe gave me oral sex or something, I forget.
How old were you?
I was, like, we were both, like, 16, 17.
Okay.
It was, like, we were both in high school. And then my first actual sexual experience was I was raped by someone who I, like, really trusted. And that was around when I was 18. And that was my first time having sex with someone. And that was a boy. And I, like, didn't talk about that for so long. So I didn't really believe – I didn't really want to be in a relationship. Like, I – when that happened, like, I just wasn't into relationships after that. I wasn't into falling in love. I thought I really cared about this person, and I had a sense of love for them. So I just wasn't interested in falling in love with anybody. So, right, like, so after that girl, like, I didn't really – get into that many relationships until college.
After you got sober, you got sober at what, 21, 22?
23.
What was the first meaningful relationship that you had after you got sober?
I would say that I dated a man in New York.
Yeah.
Who I felt, for the first time, I felt really safe, and we dated for almost 2 years. And I felt really safe and really loved in the beginning. And it sort of, like, fizzled at the end. It was a little messy. But we're still friends today. And we make videos together. And he's a great guy. And but that was the first time that I fell in love sober. And after being raped, and I felt for the first time I was, like, really safe sexually. And I was in therapy for that, and I had a couple breakthroughs around responsibility about being raped, and that it was one of the ways that I – it was one of the motives for me to get sober, right, that I don't – that I am responsible for what I put into my body. And although I'm not responsible for being taken advantage of, that I'm responsible that I – you know, that I just need to be more mindful about putting myself in situations that can be very hurtful to who I am. Right, so I don't necessarily drink anymore, not only because of that, but I just want to have my wits about me all the time. You know, I mean, it can still happen to someone who's sober, but I just want to make it. I'm committed to, you know, to not engaging in that type of behavior because I had really bad experiences with it.
So did I. How long did it take after you got sober to really start loving yourself?
I mean, it's still going on.
Yeah.
Like, it's still, you know, I beat myself up day in and day out all the time. I think everybody does, you know. And I think it's nice to talk about it because everybody, I feel like, I get the sense that a lot of people feel like they are the only ones who don't love themselves, you know. Like, and I feel like people feel very alone in that. And it's not true, right? We all go through days where we feel a sense of sadness or regret, or we're restless, irritable, or discontent about who we are. And then there's days that you feel great, right? And I feel like that is just what life is, right? With human beings, with emotional beings. But I do feel an underlying sense of, like, self-love, though, gradually more as I get sober. And the more I give away and of myself to others, the more I feel loved.
If you could give advice to anybody that's listening to this on how you can love yourself more, what would it be?
I feel like gratitude is great. One thing that I learned when I got sober is to sit in gratitude for what you have and not focus on what you want and what you don't have. And that sounds so simple and so cliche, but when I sit in gratitude and I'm like, wow, I am so lucky that I have people surrounding me that love me, an audience that supports me and that, like, wants me to be who I want to be or who I am, and family who loves me, a roof over my head, food in my belly, you know, like, I have money in my bank account, everything that I need in this moment, I have, right? And then everything that I want, it doesn't even really matter, right? Because, like, everything that I mean, I might still have things that I want, but everything I need, I have like around me, and that is something to celebrate, and I feel so lucky and grateful for that, and that like stirs up a sense of like love in my being, that I just feel loved, and I'm like that I feel lovable, that everyone is. I feel also that everyone is entitled to that, and I feel like everyone, when there's a sense of, you know, love and belonging in your community, you feel more whole. And so, yeah, I feel like the key to that is gratitude.
Why do you think ultimately we didn't work?
Well, it's your fault. I'm trying to think. Well,
I'm going to go ahead and jump okay. in here. I think that one of the best things about our relationship was our ability to communicate with each other. And I learned that from you because I have not always been a very good communicator when I'm in relationships. And you have this maturity about your love that you give that was new to me. And you talk about your feelings, not necessarily with mass people, but with me, you did.
Mm-hmm.
And you let me know how you were feeling all of the time. And when I started pulling back, I knew that I owed it to you to tell you about it, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the first thing I did. I was like, let's go walk over the Williamsburg Bridge and let's have a conversation about where we are and what we're doing and how we're feeling. And I hadn't made any type of decision at all. I just wanted to see where you were. You know, 4 months into a relationship, I think you really start to get to know somebody on a different level than you do during the beginning honeymoon phase, right? And I was just kind of gauging where you were. And that was I think, how the beginning of the end happened, right?
I knew what was coming, even in that conversation. That's why, like, I was feeling so off that day. I was like, oh, that's like him breaching the topic of him leaving. I was just like, oh, he doesn't feel this. Like, I just knew, like, I had been broken up with like that before. And then I went home and I told my roommates, I was like, I give it a week. And like, slowly but surely, he's just gonna like create more boundaries of himself to like pull away. And then like clockwork, it happened. Just because it had happened before.
I mean, I blame the play really more than anything.
I don't necessarily, I never have acted before, so I don't necessarily know what it feels like. But to be playing a character, I guess.
I was doing a play towards the end of when we were dating, and this character that I was playing was a fucking mess. And he was married, and the entire relationship, he was juggling his career with the person that he loved, and like, which was more important. And my character in the play had this just, you know, huge meltdown. And on a subconscious level, as an actor, you're going to bring these characters home with you, right? I mean, they affect, I'm not saying I'm, you know, fucking a method actor, like, you know, the best of them, but it's bound to come home with you in one sense or the other. And it really affected me. I mean, you saw me change, right?
Mm-hmm.
When I was doing the show.
Yeah, you seemed a lot more anxious.
You saw the play just once, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Looking back at it now, how are you feeling about everything? Because it's been, what, a month since we broke up?
Yeah, maybe like mid-May.
A month and a half?
It was, I felt like very numb at first, and I felt like I wasn't really having that many feelings about it. I was just like, wow, this is weird. I feel great. But I didn't feel great. I just felt like nothing. And it was like very empty. And then we did Uncut on my channel, where Nico came on and we did a video where I cut his hair and I interviewed him. Editing that was like not fun and painful, because it just is really hard to sit there and like and over to edit some and like watch us engage in such a loving way and be like, wow, that's all gone now and so wasted. And I felt like upset about that. But and then I think that kind of was a snowball effect about my feelings, so it kind of like opened me up more, and slowly but surely I felt more depressed about it.
I think it's a very important fact to talk about, that we never said I love you to each other when we were dating.
Oh yeah,
never once. And that's the only relationship I've ever been in my life where I haven't said I love you. I knew I loved you. I knew I loved you before I even, when we were, you know, having our text conversations, I knew that it was going to be something very special. But for some reason, neither one of us were able to say it to each other. And I really, looking back at it, I have no idea why. And I think things would have been different if we actually were, you know, like, I mean, I say we did such a good job of communicating with each other, but if we can't communicate our love with each other, like, what the fuck are we communicating?
No, I get that. I was, I knew that first day that I hugged you at your apartment in New York on New Year's. I was like, oh, yeah, I love this man for sure. And I almost felt like I almost didn't let myself feel it. I was like, wow, I put social boundaries on it. And I was just like, you can't love someone so quick. You don't even know this person. Like, you know, like you haven't even met. They're a stranger, basically. Like, really put myself in a box that didn't allow myself to feel that way, and which was unfortunate. And then I was just so scared to ever say anything because I was just had such a fear of rejection, right? Like I was just so scared that you were gonna be like, okay, do you know what I mean? Or have a response. And I learned a really valuable lesson by doing that is that it doesn't necessarily matter if the other person doesn't say it back or whatever. What's important is that you feel fully expressed, right? That you express your love for someone and let them know that you love them, because that's what it's all about, I feel like. And it's very unfortunate in the end if you don't say it. You know, there's like a quote in My Best Friend's Wedding, which is like one of my favorite movies, and she says, it's just talking about saying I love you, and you either say it in that moment or the moment just passes you by. And every time that I wanted to say it, I just felt like the moment just passed me by, and then I just continued to not, you know, and then when the moment would come up again, I was just like too scared to say it again, you know, and the moment would pass me by, and then I would just let it go. And it was just so sad, but I still knew in my heart how I felt.
I did too. I wrote you a letter that I gave you after we shot the uncut video that basically just said what I just said. It was just, I'm so sorry I never told you I loved you. And I still am today. I love you, Kyle Krieger.
Okay, love you more.
Hey guys, thanks for checking out this episode of The Love Bomb. Make sure you follow me on Instagram at Nico Tortorella. Check out Kyle's banging Instagram at Kyle Krieger Hair. Make sure you check us both out on Twitter. And if you feel inclined, leave a review on iTunes. It means the world to me. You guys are fucking awesome. Peace. I have one more question for you.
Okay.
If you could give someone advice on dating me, what would it be?
Buckle in. I would say wear a condom. And Nico. 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 Nico.